You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. There's an old saying that goes, those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. The Smithsonian attributes that saying to the author George Santayana. That sentence appears in his book, The Life of Reason, published 1905. All of us who were born in this country were born into a chapter of American history that we get to write during our lifetimes. But we inherited all the chapters before us, the infrastructure, the laws, economic systems, public policies, and private sector practices. They were all passed down to each generation. Because history is not past, P-A-S-T, it is passed, P-A-S-S-E-D, to each generation. And as George Santayana astutely wrote, those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. That's why I'm so fortunate today to welcome my three guests to the exchange. They all know the past and are all determined to write new chapters by creating new conditions in the communities they serve than the conditions they inherited, which were passed down from previous generations. Joining by phone, I have two guests. Michael Alexander is a former president and CEO of the Portland Urban League. He now serves as chairman of the board of directors for the Albina Vision Trust in Portland. Welcome to the exchange, Michael.
Good morning. How are you, Michael?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you for joining us. J.T. Flowers is also here. He grew up in Portland. He went to Yale, then Oxford. He's back now in his hometown, serving as a special advisor and director of government relations and communications at the Albina Vision Trust. Welcome to the exchange, J.T.
Hey, good morning, Mike. Great to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Well, we've got some sound problems, so we'll work on that in the meantime. In the studio with me is Hillary Larson. She's one of the leaders of a local community organization called All Together Now. Hillary coordinated a recent opportunity for a group from Southern Oregon to participate in the tour of the Albina community, led by J.T., at the Albina Vision Trust. Welcome to the exchange, Hillary.
Hey, good to be here.
As a disclaimer, I have a familiarity with all three of my guests. I've known of the work Michael has done in Portland since his time at the Urban League. I recently met JT a couple of months ago when I attended a tour he led through the Albina community with the Ashland Group, All Together Now. And I've known Hillary as a local leader for several years and facilitated a couple of the group's community gatherings. Michael, let's start with you. Can you give us some background on the Albina community and the goals of the Albina Vision Trust?
Well, happy to do that, Mike. I've been in Oregon and in Portland for about 20 years. I'm a transplant from the East Coast. And when I arrived here, I had a number of my friends. I'm sort of a New York guy, and I've been an East Coast resident in major cities. But people ask me, what community I was coming to in Portland. Was there a black community here? Did I know anything about it? And I admitted that I knew very little about the history of the African-American community here. And so I've been a real student of the forces, the impacts that sort of led to the development of the community in Albina, and was absolutely intrigued with the history of our community. We are a place where people have migrated to relatively recently. You know, when you look at the history of Portland and the history of the African American community, it goes back several decades. But if you begin to look at our place in North Carolina or Texas or Arkansas, those are communities that go back centuries. And so that uniqueness was something that I was very, very interested in learning about. I learned that the huge migration that populated a significant portion of our community in Albina was triggered during the 40s and World War II. Prior to that, many of our residents had resided actually on the other side of the river. On the west side, near the railroads, they were largely populating hotels, entertainment venues, and transportation-related venues. But a very small population. At the turn of the century, we were less than 2,000. At the end of 1950, we were well in excess of 25,000. So it's been an interesting history to look at how the Albina community was developed based on these employment needs, based on the displacement of our population from Vanport, and the way in which this community has created not only resilience and perseverance, but a strong sense of pride and joy that's been a part of our history here for well over 60 years. So the Albina community was really the central focal point of African-American life and entertainment and the arts and business for the last 60 years. And it has also unfortunately been the target of disinvestment, displacement, and in many ways poignant disregard for the needs of families and children and education and institutions that are designed to support community.
Well, I understand that the community was displaced because of eminent domain. The freeway was built through there, a number of government and corporate projects just uprooted a lot of the residents, and they had to leave Albina. Tell me about that, and now what's being done through the Albina Vision Trust to reimagine that community and redevelop it?
Well, Neil, Mike, you alluded to some of the major impacts of displacement there, and clearly, you know, you can look at the street grid for the Albina community in the 1940s and 1950s, and what you will see is a populated community, streets, tree lines, businesses. The density there was very clear. I mean, 80% of the African-American residents in this area resided within three zip codes in that area. If you look at it now, you can see huge splotches that look as if there's been just wide-scale eradication. The presence of the Veterans Memorial Coliseum, the impact of looking at the impacts of I-5 and that it literally cut the community in half, the expansion of Legacy Hospital, the location and siting of Portland Public Schools headquarters. I mean, each of these were parts of residential communities that now don't exist. I mentioned that I'm a New Yorker. I grew up in Bedford-Stuyvesant in Brooklyn, which has been tremendously gentrified, tremendously. But I have the privilege of taking my grandchildren back and pointing to the brownstone that I and their uncles and their grandparents resided in the, you know, 50s, 60s, and 70s. There are thousands of families here that can't do that. They can't point to the physical structure because it doesn't exist any longer. And so what the Albina Vision Trust has really committed itself to is recreating community in this area that is a reflection of not only what we aspire to be as a city, but to honor the costs and the sacrifices that were paid by the residents, the businesses who had been here previously. And for some of us, it is a lesson, it is history that we're learning, but there's still a significant portion of our population, our elders, for whom this is memory. They can see when they travel down these areas, they are visited by sort of the visions of what had existed previously and are motivated to create new community, which is a reflection of both our past and our aspirations for the future.
If you're just joining us, my three guests are Michael Alexander, chairman of the board of directors at the Albina Vision Trust in Portland, J.T. Flowers, director of government relations and communications at the Albina Vision Trust, and Hillary Larson of the Ashland Group, All Together Now. J.T., you grew up in the community and left to pursue sports and higher education. Can you walk us through your journey from growing up in that community through your return to serve with the Albina Vision Trust?
Yeah, absolutely. And can you folks hear me all right now?
Your audio's coming in good.
That's great. Yeah, so first off, Mike, thank you again for having us. I'm born and raised in the Northeast Portland. I grew up right off Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard in Alberta, in the heart of what was a not just historically Black neighborhood, but a neighborhood that was Black in the present tense. It was a bustling and thriving place where folks knew their neighbors, where folks looked after one another, and where folks carried a great deal of pride around the notion of being from Northeast Portland. Over the course of my lifetime, really the past 32 years, that neighborhood has changed dramatically. And I think the most beautiful part of the work that we get to do at Urbana Vision Trust is to stitch together that past 32 years with the 30 years that preceded it. Our neighborhood has been the epicenter of so much culture, of so many great thinkers, of pioneering models of education, of tree planting initiatives that revolutionized the way that we thought about the beautification of cities up and down the West Coast. And what we are trying to do at scale is not just rebuild the neighborhood that used to exist here 60 or 70 years ago, but to build a world-class neighborhood that repositions community in the driver's seat and dictate their own future. For me, that's a deeply personal mission. As you mentioned, and as I just spoke to, this is home for me. And I could think of no greater purpose than getting to wake up every day and rebuild the place that I grew up in. So, but my journey's taken me to a few different places, the East Coast for college, DC for a stretch, the United Kingdom for grad school. There was never any doubt that this would be where I returned.
So when you played basketball at Yale, you went to Oxford, and now you're back in Portland trying to redevelop a community. Why?
Well, I actually don't even think it's all that complicated. Oftentimes, kids who grow up in spaces like these live their entire lives trying to find a way out of the circumstances they were born into. I think as a child, my singular goal and passion was getting as far away from this place as I humanly could. And I feel like in so many senses, I accomplished that, right? I went to a school quite literally on the opposite end of the country and then the opposite end of the world. But the further I got away from this place, the more clearly I realized just how special this place was and the more deeply grateful I became to be able to call myself a son of this city and specifically of this community. I was a community-raised kid. I would never have been able to accomplish a sliver of the things that I've been able to see in this life without the support of this village here who has poured into me and lifted me up at every step. So I don't think there was any doubt in my mind as to where I belong. And to speak to this theme of intergenerationality that you've mentioned, right? History isn't past, it's past, P-A-S-S-E-D. I see this as our generation's leg of the race, but that's something we have a responsibility to see through.
I appreciate the sports metaphor. Hillary, you organize the opportunity for a Southern Oregon group to see what the Albina Vision Trust is doing in Portland to redevelop a former Red Line community. What did you see there that you believe can benefit the Ashland community here?
Well, I'm just so excited about Albina Vision Trust for many reasons and what it has to do with here. And I'll give you a little background myself. I was born in Portland but grew up in Southern Oregon. And like JT, I left thinking, oh, I'm gone. I'm out of here. Got my degree in radio and television, did some schooling in England, just like JT. Ended up in Portland in the 90s, and I ran a nonprofit in the African American community in this area that we're speaking of. I did not know the history of that area. I actually didn't know the history of Oregon and race in Oregon at the time either. And so when I was running my nonprofit, it was a degraded area. I would walk into my office and step on crack vials. And the reason for that, which I didn't know, is that neighborhood had been decimated. Those homes had been taken away. In fact, one of my closest colleagues.
One of your closest colleagues.
Yes.
We're going to leave that as a cliffhanger because I hear the music, you hear the music. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, I'll have with me my guests, Michael Alexander and J.T. Flowers of the Albina Vision Trust in Portland, and Hillary Larson from the Ashland Group all together now. I'm Mike Green. You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. My guests are Michael Alexander, chairman of the board of directors at the Albina Vision Trust in Portland, J.T. Flowers, director of government relations and communications at Albina Vision Trust, and Hillary Larson from the Ashland Group all together now. You can join this conversation in person at the Meese Auditorium on May 29th at 3 p.m. on the campus of Southern Oregon University. For more information, go to ashlandtogether.org. Now, before the break, Hillary was telling us about her connection to Portland and her connection to Albina and about your colleague.
Yeah, my cliffhanger moment before we took a break. I had a colleague that I worked with in the 90s at that time, and his family lost their home during the construction of I-5. And I didn't even know about, I knew I-5, you drive across it, but I didn't think about what happened before, who was there before, the over 300 homes just in that one particular area gone. We want to take the highway through there, so we're going to do it. And so all those families had to go someplace else. So I discovered Albina Vision Trust a few years ago. And when I heard what I call radical dreaming, something that was could take an intractable problem and change it through just surprising collaborations and really forward thinking, I thought, this applies to everything. Yes, this is about Portland. Yes, this is about a neighborhood that's being reconstructed in the most magnificent way, which is part of the reason why I invited that tour of people to come from Southern Oregon, because when you see it for yourself, it's like when you have a favorite movie and you tell people about it for years and years, and then finally they go see it too, and they're like, oh, no wonder you love this movie. That is the joy of Albina Vision Trust and the possibility and what it means for us here is we have horrendous problems here, huge problems here with SOU and medical care and homelessness, all these things that feel like a wave coming out. What are we going to do? Then we turn to people like the folks at Albina Vision Trust, and their innovation and inspiration is contagious, and I feel like that's what could happen here in whatever our problems are, however it applies to us.
So collective envisioning of where you live can happen wherever you live.
That's right.
Michael, as chair of the board at Albina Vision Trust, how do you and your team of directors establish the necessary partnerships needed to transform the Albina community?
Well, Mike, you know, first of all, we are so blessed and guided by an unbelievably talented and devoted and committed staff. JT is surrounded by colleagues within the organization who are just subject matter experts par excellence, whether it's in development, communication, the arts, community outreach. I think we've come to this work understanding that the greatest insights are contained within the lives of families and businesses who are closest to the suffering, the displacement. So what we've spent a lot of time in our formative years is sitting in front of people and listening. You know, what does it mean to sort of reinvent community here? What is it that you would expect to see that both honors the past but allows us to create a path forward that is reflective of all that we are deserving of and anticipating, you know, for our children, for our grandchildren going forward? I think the Vision Trust is really the repository of those expectations, of those aspirations, of the commitment of people who have been a part of what has been a torturous journey for many over many decades. And our hope is to be able to take that insight, to take that indigenous wisdom, to codify it, to put it in programs, to put it in the context of not only the world that was displaced, but quite frankly, the world that we want to create. What do we see now ahead of us? How do we leverage information, technology, generational wealth transfer, business development? We follow this continuum that says restorative justice has to follow a path of restorative economics and restorative development. You know, how does the built environment, how does the intellectual properties of this community need to be constructed not only for today, but for decades to come? Our vision is not a five-year vision, it's not a 10-year vision, it's a 50-year vision. You know, many, you know, we tease ourselves to say that, you know, those of us who are involved in this work today will likely, if we're able to be moderately successful, not be in a position to see the fruit of our labor, but we'll know that the groundwork has been laid, and we'll know that there are people who will step into the spaces that we vacate to continue it going forward. So that has really been the driving force of the vision. It's been our North Star, and it continues to be refined and expanded even as the circumstances that we find ourselves looking to address continue to morph as well.
If you're just joining us, my guests are Michael Alexander, Chairman of the Board of Directors at the Albina Vision Trust in Portland, J.T. Flowers, Director of Government Relations and Communications at the Albina Vision Trust, and Hillary Larson from the Ashland Group Altogether Now. Michael, that reminds me, what you guys are doing reminds me of the Reconstruction era after the Civil War, when folks understood that there needed to be a redesign and a reconstruction of this, the conditions of this nation, and an equitable ownership of the American dream of prosperity. And when you think of equitable ownership, certainly you think of home ownership and community ownership and control. JT, the history of Albina isn't well known, even there in Portland, among a lot of folks. And that remains true for the history of Black people across this state. The story of the Great Migration and racially redlined communities is still one that most white Oregonians are not familiar with, and that includes most elected officials. Why is it important to bridge that communication gap, and how are you working on it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think you spoke to it again in the intro for this interview, right, where you talk about the things we pass down from one generation to the next. We cannot avoid repeating the failures of the past unless we understand how we landed where we are. And I think similarly, we can't truly envision a future that centers the well-being of all of us, the prosperity of all of us on a generational level, unless we understand who we are and how we came to be in this space that we necessarily have to share as neighbors. So the storytelling effort that goes into the work of reminding people of where we've come from and how we landed where we are is an essential part of the broader recipe of future builders.
So if Albina Vision Trust is 100% successful in achieving its goals, paint the picture for me of what that looks like and the time frame in which you would like to see it happen.
Yeah, I think we would be walking through one of the most innovative and world-class neighborhoods, not just in Portland, the state of Oregon, but in the United States of America and in the entire world together 20 years from now. I think that neighborhood would be filled to the brim with children laughing, playing, families that not only are familiar with one another, but see one another as not just neighbors, but extensions of their own families. I think that the children who grow up in that neighborhood, be they Black children, historically displaced children, or working class children, would look to their futures with a sense of optimism that is not naive, but one that is instead rooted in reality, a world that truly provides them opportunity from cradle to grave. And my hope would be that those children walking around this completely reimagined neighborhood see the neighborhood that they were born into as a place that is worth staying in, worth building a life in, worth deepening their roots in. If we can do that, I feel like we'll be tremendously successful. I think so much attention gets paid to the buildings, the way they look, the youth spaces, but the most essential defining factor of a neighborhood are the people who call it home. And if we can't reroot a true sense of community in the neighborhood, we won't have done our jobs.
Wow, that reminds me of Dr. King's community of belonging. Hillary, the Albina Vision Trust leaders are coming to Ashland. You organize that event here on the SOU campus on May 29th called Choosing Imagination. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I want to say there's me sitting here, but there are lots and lots of people involved in this project who've been doing the work for a long, long time, longer than me. So the reason why we wanted to bring Albina Vision Trust here is to really bring home this idea, and I'm going to edit the word horrendous when I said horrendous problems. We have significant problems here, but I also feel hopeful when I listen to people like JT and Mike, that when we can really come together and de-silo ourselves, amazing things happen. We've seen it in history when there seems to be these collapses that happen, and they're almost guaranteed. But in that, when an old system starts to fall, something else happens. There's an opening for that. And to me, this conversation on the 29th, which I hope people come to, that's the conversation, is yes, we have these significant problems, but there are people that are doing remarkable things, and we can be part of that in our own way.
Okay, so this collective envisioning looks at not just the challenges, but the opportunities.
Absolutely. In fact, I think that's the root of my enthusiasm and my excitement around Albina Vision Trust, because we have genius here in Southern Oregon. We have people, when they get in the room, it's like, I didn't think of that. And then there's a certain energy that happens. You see it all the time. And so I feel like the ground is fertile for more of that, and that we'll surprise each other a year from now or 2 years from now or 10 years from now of what was created in the midst of this chaos and fear.
Okay, and so Albina Vision Trust is going to come and share their story with us, and then we can take from that what we will and apply it here where we live.
Exactly.
Now, I understand that there's also some entertainment part of this. They're going to go see a play at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival.
Yeah, we actually arranged for everyone to come to A Raisin in the Sun. And the story is so appropriate and so pertinent. This story of Lorraine Hansberry talks about who is the playwright for A Raisin in the Sun, talks about radical dreaming and what hope means for people. People have different versions of hope. And when that hope is crushed, it's devastating, but another seed is planted. So it's very parallel to Albina Vision Trust's work and also our work here.
Okay. Michael, have you had a chance to experience the Oregon Shakespeare Festival?
You know, Mike, I have not. This will be a first time for me. My wife will be accompanying me, and her birthday is the next day, so we're going to be able to layer on a couple of very special days over this weekend.
Excellent. What about you, JT? A Raisin in the Sun, I believe March 28th?
Yeah, I have never been to the Shakespeare Festival as well, so I'm quite excited.
Well, you both are in for a treat. That's one of the special treasures we have here in Southern Oregon, right here in Ashland. At the end of the day, Hillary, what do you want people to know about this event as we close the show?
Well, the event itself, you'll get to hear the story, and the story itself is just, it's compelling, it's educational, and also then the questions that we get to ask back and forth And you'll walk out. I guarantee you, you'll walk out thinking differently about the world you live in.
Okay, we'll have to leave it there. Thanks to you all. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us, Mike. We appreciate it.
My guests were Albina Vision Trust leaders Michael Alexander and J.T. Flowers, and Hillary Larson from the Ashland Group, All Together Now. You can join this conversation in person at the Meese Auditorium on May 29th at 3 p.m. on the campus of Southern Oregon University. More information is at ashlandtogether.org.